am still a stranger to this business culture, Mr. Laney. I find it difficult to assess these things.
What did Blackwell mean last night about Rez wanting to marry a Japanese girl who isn't real?
Idoru,
Yamazaki said. What?
Idol singer. She is Rei Toei. She is a personality construct. A congeries of software agents, the creation of information designers. She is akin to what I believe they call a synthespian in Hollywood.
Laney closed his eyes, opened them. Then how can he marry her?
I don't know,
Yamazaki said.
But he has very forcefully declared this to be his intention.
Can you tell me what it is they've hired you to do?
Initially, I think they hoped I would be able to explain the Idoru to them, her appeal to her audience, therefore perhaps her appeal to him. Also, I think that, like Blackwell, they remain unconvinced that this is not the result of a conspiracy of some kind. Now they want me to acquaint you with the cultural background of the situation.
Who are they?
I cannot be more specific now.
The top was starting to wobble.
Laney saw something like terror in the girl's eyes.
You don't think there's a conspiracy?
I will try to answer your questions this evening. In the meantime, while it is being arranged for you to access the data, please study these.
Hey,
Laney protested, as his top-spinning girl was replaced by an unfamiliar logo, a grinning cartoon bulldog with a spiked collar, up to its muscular neck and a big bowl of soup. Two documentary videos on low res, Yamazaki said. These are on the Dog Soup label, originally a small independent based in East Taipei. They released the band's first recording. Low res later purchased Dog Soup and used it to release less commercial material by other artists. Laney stared glumly at the grinning bulldog, missing the girl with pigtails.
Like documentaries about themselves?
The documentaries were not made subject to the band's approval. They are not low-res corporate documents.
Well, I guess we've got that to be thankful for.
You are welcome.
Yamazaki hung up.
The virtual POV zoomed, rotating in on one of the spikes on the dog's collar. In close-up, it was a shining steel pyramid. Reflected clouds whipped past in time-lapse on the towering triangular face as the Universal Copyright Agreement warning scrolled into view. Laney watched long enough to see that the video was spliced together from bits and pieces of the band's public relations footage.
Art warning, he said,
and went into the bathroom to decipher the shower controls. He managed to miss the first 6 minutes, showering and brushing his teeth. He'd seen things like that before, art videos, but he'd never actually tried to pay attention to one. Putting on the hotel's white terry robe, he told himself he'd better try. Yamazaki seemed capable of quizzing him on it later. Why did people make things like this? There was no narration, no apparent structure. Some of the same fragments kept repeating throughout at different speeds. In Los Angeles, there were whole public access channels devoted to things like this, and homemade talk shows hosted by naked Encino witches who sat in front of big paintings of the goddess they'd done in their garages. Except you could watch that. The logic of these cut-ups, he supposed, was that by making one, you could somehow push back at the medium. Maybe it was supposed to be something like treading water, a simple, repetitive human activity that temporarily provided at least an illusion of parity with the sea. But to Laney, who had spent many of his waking hours down in the deeper realms of data that underlay the worlds of media, it only looked hopeless. And tedious, too. Although he supposed that that boredom was somehow meant to be harnessed here. Another way of pushing back. Why else would anyone have selected and edited all these bits of low and res? The Chinese guitarist and the half-Irish singer, saying stupid things in dozens of different television spots. Most of them probably intended for translation. Greetings seem to be a theme. We're happy to be here in Vladivostok. We hear you've got a great new aquarium. We congratulate you on your free elections and your successful dengue abatement campaign. We've always loved London. New York, you're pragmatic.
Laney explored the remains of his breakfast, finding a half-eaten slice of cold brown toast under a steel plate cover. There was an inch of coffee left in the pot. He didn't want to think about the call from Rydell or what it might mean. He thought he was done with Slitscan, done with the lawyers.
"Singapore, you're beautiful," Rez said, Lo chiming in with, "Hello, Lion City."
He picked up the remote and hopefully tried the fast forward. No. Mute? No. Yamazaki was having the stuff piped in for his benefit. He considered unplugging the console, but he was afraid they'd be able to tell. It was speeding up now. The cuts more frequent, the whole more content-free, a numbing blur. Rez's grin was starting to look sinister, something with an agenda of its own that jumped unchanged from one cut to the next. Suddenly it all slid away, into handheld shadow, highlights on rococo gilt. There was a clatter of glassware. The image had a peculiar flattened quality that he knew from slit scan. The smallest lapel cameras did that, the ones disguised as flecks of lint. A restaurant? Club? Someone seated opposite the camera, beyond a phalanx of green bottles. The darkness and the bandwidth of the tiny camera making the features impossible to read. Then Rez leaned forward, recognizable in the new depth of focus. He gestured toward the camera with a glass of red wine. If we could ever once stop talking about the music and the industry and all the politics of that, I think I'd probably tell you that it's easier to desire and pursue the attention of tens of millions of total strangers than it is to accept the love and loyalty of the people closest to us. Someone, a woman, said something in French. Lainey guessed that she was the one wearing the camera. "Ease up, Rosa. She doesn't understand half you're saying." Lainey sat forward. The voice had been Blackwell's. "Doesn't she?" Rez receded, out of focus. "Because if she did, I think I'd tell her about the loneliness of being misunderstood. Or is it the loneliness of being afraid to allow ourselves to be understood?" And the frame froze on the singer's blurred face. A date and time stamp. 2 years earlier. The word misunderstood appeared. The phone rang. "Yeah? Blackwell says there is a window of opportunity. The schedule has been moved up. You can access now." It was Yamazaki. "Good," Lainey said. "I don't think I'm getting very far with this first video."
Rez's quest for renewed artistic meaning? "Don't worry. We will screen it for you again later."
"I'm relieved," Lainey said. "Is the second one as good?"
"The second documentary is more conventionally structured. In-depth interviews, biographical detail. BBC 3 years ago."
"Wonderful.
Blackwell is on his way to the hotel. Goodbye."
Tokyo chapter. The site Mitsuko's chapter had erected for the meeting reminded Chia of Japanese prints she'd seen on a school trip to the museum in Seattle. There was a brownish light that seemed to arrive through layers of ancient varnish. There were hills in the distance with twisted trees, their branches like quick black squiggles of ink. She came vectoring in beside Mitsuko toward a wooden house with deep overhanging eaves, its shape familiar from anime. It was the sort of house that ninjas crept into in the dark to wake a sleeping heroine and tell her that all was not as she thought, that her uncle was in league with the evil warlord. She checked how she was presenting in a small peripheral window, put a nudge more depth into her lips. Nearing the house, she saw that everything had been worked up out of club archives, so that the whole environment was actually made of low-res material. You noticed it first in the wooden paper panels of the walls, where faint image fragments, larger than life, came and went with the organic randomness of leaf-dappled sun and shadow. Rez's cheekbone and half a pair of black glasses, Lo's hand cording the neck of his guitar. But these changed, were replaced with a moth-like flicker, and there would be more, all the way down into the site's finest resolution, its digital fabric. She wasn't sure if you could do that with enough of the right kind of fractal packets, or if you needed some kind of special computer. Her sandbenders managed a few effects like that, but mainly in its presentation of sandbenders software. Screens slid aside as she and Mitsuko, seated cross-legged, entered the house. Coming to a neat halt, side by side, still seated, floating about 3 inches off the tatami, which Chia avoided focusing on after she'd seen that it was woven from concert footage. Too distracting. It was a nice way to make an entrance. Mitsuko was wearing the kimono and the wide belt thing, the whole traditional outfit, except there was some low-key animation going on in the weave of the fabric. Chia herself had downloaded this black Silke Marie Kolb blouson and tight set, even though she hated paying for virtual designer stuff that they wouldn't even let you keep or copy. She'd used Kelsey's cash card number for that, though, which had made her feel better about it. There were 7 girls waiting there, all in kimonos, all floating just off the tatami, except the one sitting by herself at the head of the imaginary table was a robot. Not like any real robot, but a slender chrome-skinned thing, like Mercury constrained within the form of a girl. The face was smooth, only partially featured, eyeless, with twin straight rows of small holes where a mouth should have been. That would be Hiromi Ogawa, and Chia immediately decided to believe that she was overweight. Hiromi's kimono was crawling with animated sepia-tone footage from band interviews. The introductions took a while, and everyone there definitely had a title, but Chia had stopped paying attention after Hiromi's introduction, except to bow when she thought she was supposed to. She didn't like it that Hiromi would turn up that way for a first meeting. It was rude, she thought, and it had to be deliberate, and the trouble they'd gone to with the space just seemed to make it more deliberate. "We are honored to welcome you, Chia McKenzie. Our chapter looks forward to affording you every assistance. We are proud to be a part of the ongoing global appreciation of low-res, their music, and their art." "Thank you," Chia said, and sat there as a silence lengthened. Mitsuko quietly cleared her throat. "Uh-oh," Chia thought, "speech time." "Thank you for offering the help," Chia said. "Thanks for your hospitality. If any of you ever comes to Seattle, we'll find a way to put you up. But mainly thanks for your help, because my chapter's been really worried about this story that Rez claims he wants to marry some kind of software agent. And since he's supposed to have said it when he was over here, we thought..." Chia had had the feeling that she was moving along a little too abruptly, and this was confirmed by another tiny throat-clearing signal from Mitsuko. "Yes," Hiromi Ogawa said. "You are welcome. And now, Tomo Oshima, our chapter's historian, will favor us with a detailed and accurate account of our chapter's story. How we came from simple but sincere beginning to be the most active, the most respectful chapter in Japan today." Chia couldn't believe it. The girl nearest Hiromi, on Chia's right, bowed and began to recite the chapter's history in what Chia immediately understood would be the most excruciatingly boring detail. The 2 boarding school roommates, best friends and the most loyal of buddies, who discovered a copy of the Dog Soup album in a bin in Akihabara. How they returned to school with it, played it, were immediate converts. How their schoolmates mocked them, at one point even stealing and hiding the precious recording. And on, and Chia already felt like screaming, but there was nothing for it but to sit there. She pulled up a clock and stuck it on the mirrored robot's face, where the eyes should have been. Nobody else could see it, but it made her feel a little better. Now they were into the first Japanese national low-res convention. Snapshots flashing on the white paper walls, little girls in jeans and t-shirts drinking Coca-Cola in some function room in an Osaka airport hotel, a few obvious parents standing around in the background. 45 minutes later, by the red readout stuck to Hiromi Ogawa's blank metallic face, Tomo Oshima concluded,
"Which brings us to the present, and the historic visit of Chia McKenzie, the representative of our sister chapter in Seattle in the state of Washington. And now I hope that she will honor us by recounting the history of her own chapter, how it was founded, and the many activities it has undertaken to honor the music of low-res."
There was a soft burst of applause. Chia didn't join in, uncertain whether it was for her or for Tomo Oshima.
"Sorry," Chia said. "Our historian put all that together for you, but it got corrupted when they ran my computer through that big scanner at the airport."
"We are very sorry to hear that," the silver robot said.
"How unfortunate."
"Yeah," Chia said.
"But I guess it gives us more time to discuss what brings me here, right? We had hoped to help us understand this whole Rez thing, right? We know. We're glad you do. Because we're all really worried about this rumor. Because it seems like it started here. And this Ray Toei's a local product. So if anybody can tell us what's going on, it's you.
The silver robot said nothing. It was expressionless as ever. But Chia took the clock away, just to be sure.
That's why I'm here, Chia said, to find out if it's true he wants to marry her.
She sensed a general uneasiness. The six girls were looking at the texture-mapped tatami, unwilling to meet her eye. She wanted to look at Mitsuko, but it would have been too obvious.
We are an official chapter, Hiromi said. We have the honor of working closely with actual employees of the band. Their publicists are also concerned with the rumor you mentioned, and they have requested that we assist them in seeing that it is not spread further.
Spread? It's been on the net for a week.
It is rumor only.
Then they should issue a denial.
Denial would add weight to the rumor.
The posting said that Rez had announced that he was in love with Rei Soe, that he was going to marry her. There was a long quote.
Chia was definitely starting to get the feeling that something was wrong here. This was not what she'd come all this physical distance for.
She might as well have been sitting in her bedroom in Seattle. We think that the original posting was a hoax. You would not be the first.
You think?
Doesn't that mean you don't know?
Our sources within the organization assure us there is no cause for concern.
Spin control, Chia said.
You imply that low-res employees are lying to us?
Look, Chia said, I'm as into the band as anybody. I came all this way, right? But the people who work for them are just people who work for them. If Rez gets up in a club one night, takes the mic and announces that he's in love with this Idoru and swears he's going to marry her, the PR people are going to say whatever they think they have to say.
But you have no evidence that any of this occurred. Only an anonymous posting, claiming to be a transcription of a recording made in a club in Shinjuku.
Monkey boxing. We looked it up. It's there.
Really?
Perhaps you should go there.
Why?
There is no longer a club called Monkey Boxing.
There isn't.
Clubs in Shinjuku are extremely short-lived. There is no Monkey Boxing.
All of Hiromi's smug satisfaction came through in the sandbender's translation.
Chia stared at the smooth silver face.
Stonewalling bitch.
What to do?
What would Zona Rosa do if she were in Chia's place?
Something symbolically violent, Chia decided, but that wasn't her style.
Thank you, Chia said. We just wanted to make sure it wasn't happening. Sorry I hit on you that way, but we had to be certain. If you say it's not happening, we'll accept that. We all care about Rez and the rest of the band, and we know you do too.
Chia added a bow of her own, one that seemed to take Hiromi off guard. Now it was the robot's turn to hesitate. She hadn't expected Chia to just roll over that way.
Our friends in the low-res organization are very concerned that this pointless hoax not affect the public's perception of Rez. You are aware that there has always been a tendency to portray him as the most creative, but least stable member of the band.
This last, at least, was true,
though Rez's style of instability was fairly mild compared with most of his pop cultural forebears. He had never been arrested, never spent a night in jail. But he was still the one most likely to get into trouble. It had always been part of his charm.
Sure, Chia said, playing along, relishing the uncertainty she was sure she was causing Hiromi.
And they try to make Lo out as some kind of boring techie, the practical one. But we know that isn't true either.
She tagged it with a smile.
Yes,
Hiromi said, of course.
But you are satisfied then? You will explain to your chapter that this was all the result of some prank? And that all is well with Rez?
If you say so, Chia said.
Absolutely. And if that settles it, then I've got 3 more days to kill in Japan.
To kill.
Idiom, Chia said. Free time. Mitsuko says I ought to see Kyoto.
Kyoto is very beautiful.
I'm on my way, Chia said. Thanks for putting the site together for our meeting. It's really great. And if you'll save it, I'd love to access it later with the rest of my chapter. Maybe we could all get together here when I'm back in Seattle. Introduce our chapters.
Yes.
Hiromi definitely didn't know what to make of Chia's attitude. So worry about it, Chia thought.
You knew, Chia said. You knew she'd do that.
Mitsuko was blushing bright red, looking at the floor, her jelly bag computer on her lap.
I am sorry. It was her decision. They got to her, right? They told her to get rid of me, hush it up. She communicates with the low-res people privately. It is one of the privileges of her position.
Chia still had her tip sets on.
I have to talk with my chapter now. Can you give me a few minutes alone?
She felt sorry for Mitsuko, but she was still angry.
I'm not angry with you, okay? I will make tea,
Mitsuko said. When Mitsuko had closed the door behind her, Chia checked that the sandbenders was still ported, put the goggles back on, and selected the Seattle chapter's main site.
She never got there.
Zona Rosa was waiting to cut her out. 15. Akihabara. Low gray cloud pressing down on the sheer gray city. A glimpse of new buildings through the scaled-down limo's tinted lace-curtained windows. They passed an Apple Shires ad, a cobbled lane leading away into some hologram nursery land where smiling juice bottles danced and sang. Lainey's jet lag was back, in some milder but more baroque format. Something compounded of a pervasive sense of guilt and a feeling of physical distance from his own body, as though the sensory signals arrived stale, after too long a passage, through some other country that he himself was never privy to.
I thought we'd done with all of that when we got rid of those Siberian neuropaths, Blackwell said. He was dressed entirely in black, which had the effect of somewhat reducing his bulk.
He wore a soft, smock-like garment sewn from very black denim, multiple pockets around its wide hem. Lainey thought it looked vaguely Japanese, in some medieval way, something a carpenter might wear.
Bent as a dog's hind legs. Picked them up during the Combinat state.
Neuropath?
Filling Rez's head with their garbage. He's vulnerable to influences, touring. Combination of stress and boredom. Cities start to look the same. One hotel room after another. It's a syndrome is what it is.
Where are we going?
Akihabara.
Where?
Where we're going.
Blackwell consulted an enormous, elaborately dialed, steel-braceleted chronometer that looked as though it had been designed to do double duty as brass knuckles.
Took a month before they let me ever go and do what was needed. Then we got him over to a clinic in Paris, and they told us what those bastards had been feeding him had made a pig's breakfast of his endocrine system. Put him right in the end, but it needn't have happened. None of it.
But you got rid of them? Lainey had no idea what Blackwell was talking about, but it seemed best to keep up the illusion of conversation.
Told them I was thinking about putting them face first through a little Honda tree shredder I'd purchased. Just on the off chance, Blackwell said. Not necessary. Showed them it, though. In the end, they were sent along with no more than a moderate touch-up.
Lainey looked at the back of the driver's head. The right-hand drive worried him. He felt like there was nobody in the driver's seat. How long did you say you'd worked for the band?
5 years.
Lainey thought of the video. Blackwell's voice in the darkened club. 2 years ago. Where are we going?
Be there soon enough.
They entered an area of narrower streets, of featureless, vaguely shabby buildings covered with unlit, inactivated advertising. Huge representations of media platforms Lainey didn't recognize. Some of the buildings revealed what he assumed was quake damage. Head-sized gobs of a brownish, glass-like substance protruded from cracks that ran diagonally across one facade, like a cheap toy repaired badly by a clumsy giant. The limo pulled to the curb.
Electric tan, Blackwell said. I'll page you, he said to the driver, who nodded in a way that struck Lainey as being not particularly Japanese.
Blackwell opened the door and got out with that same unlikely grace Lainey had noted before, the car bucking noticeably with the departure of his weight. Lainey, sliding across the gray velour seat, felt tired and wooden. Somehow, I was expecting a more upscale destination, he said to Blackwell. It was true.
Stop expecting, Blackwell said.
The building with the cracks and the brown sap-like knobs opened into a white and pastel sea of kitchen appliances. The ceiling was low, laced with temporary-looking pipes and conduits. Lainey followed Blackwell down a central aisle. A few figures stood along other aisles to either side,
but he had no way of knowing whether these were salespeople or potential customers. An old-fashioned escalator was grinding away at the end of the central aisle, the rectilinear steel teeth at the edges of each ascending step worn sharp and bright. Blackwell kept walking, levitated ahead of Laney, climbing, his feet barely seeming to move. Laney mounted hard behind him. They rose up to a second level, this one displaying a less consistent range of goods. Wall screens, immersion consoles, automated recliners with massage modules bulging from their cushions like the heads of giant mechanical grubs. Along an aisle walled with corrugated plastic curtains, Blackwell with his scarred hands tucked deep in the pockets of his ninja smock. Into a maze of bright blue plastic tarps slung from pipes overhead. Unfamiliar tools. A worker's dented thermos standing on a red toolkit that spanned a pair of aluminum sawhorses. Blackwell holding a final tarp aside, Laney ducked, entering. "We've been holding it open for the past hour, Blackwell," someone said. "Not an easy thing." Blackwell let the tarp fall into place behind him. "Had to collect him from the hotel." The space, walled off with the blue tarps on three sides, was twice the size of Laney's hotel room, but considerably more crowded. A lot of hardware was assembled there. A collection of black consoles were cabled together in a white swamp of styrofoam packing form, torn corrugated plastic, and crumpled sheets of bubble pack. Two men and a woman, waiting. It was the woman who had spoken. As Laney shuffled forward, ankle deep through the packing material, the stuff creaked and popped, slippering under the soles of his shoes. Blackwell kicked at it. "You might have tidied up." "We aren't set dressers," the woman said. She sounded Laney as though she was from Northern California. She had short brown hair cut in bangs, and something about her reminded him of the Quants who worked at Slitscan. Like the other two, men, one Japanese and one red-haired, she wore jeans and a generic nylon bomber jacket. "Hell of a job on short notice," the redhead said. "No notice," the other corrected. And he was definitely from California. His hair was pulled straight back, fastened high in a little samurai ponytail. "What you paid for?" Blackwell said. "We're paid to tour," the redhead said. "If you want to tour again, you'd better hope that these work." Blackwell looked at the cabled consoles. Laney saw a folding plastic table set up against the rear wall. It was bright pink. There was a gray computer there, a pair of iPhones. Unfamiliar cables ran to the nearest console. Flat ribbons, candy-striped in different colors. The wall behind was plastered with an overlay of old advertising. A woman's eye was directly behind the pink table, a yard wide, her laser-printed pupil the size of Laney's head. Laney moved toward the table, through the styrofoam, sliding his feet, a motion not unlike cross-country skiing. "Let's do it," he said. "Let's see what you've got." 16. Zona. Zona Rosa kept a secret place, a country carved from what once had been a corporate website. It was a valley lined with ruined swimming pools, overgrown with cactus and red Christmas flowers. Lizards posed like hieroglyphs on mosaics of shattered tile. No houses stood in that valley, though sections of broken wall gave shade, or rusting rectangles of corrugated metal set aslant on weathered wooden uprights. Sometimes there were ashes of a cooking fire. She kept it early evening there.
"Zona, someone is trying to find you."
Zona in a ragged leather jacket over a white t-shirt. In that place, she presented as a quick collage, fragments torn from films, magazines, Mexican newspapers, dark eyes, Aztec cheekbones, a dusting of acne scars, her black hair tangled like smoke. She kept the resolution down, never let herself come entirely into focus.
"My mother?" "No, someone with resources, someone who knows that you're in Tokyo."
The narrow toes of her black boots were pale with the dust of the valley. There were copper zips down the outer seams of her faded black jeans, waist to ankle.
"Why are you dressed that way?"
Gia remembered that she was still presenting in the Silke Marie Kolb outfit.
"There was a meeting. Very formal. Major butt pain. I got this with Kelsey's cash card." "Where were you ported?
When you paid for it?
Where I'm ported now. Mitsuko's place.
Zona frowned.
What other purchases have you made?
None.
Nothing?
A subway ticket.
Zona snapped her fingers and a lizard scurried from beneath a rock. It ran up her leg and into her waiting hand. As she stroked it with the fingers of the other hand, the patterns of its coloration changed. She tapped its head and the lizard ran down her leg, vanishing behind a crumpled sheet of rusted roofing.
Kelsey is frightened. Frightened enough to come to me.
Frightened of what?
Someone contacted her about your ticket. They were trying to reach her father because the points used to purchase it were his. But he is traveling. They spoke with Kelsey instead. I think they threatened her.
With what?
I don't know. But she gave them your name and the number of the cash card.
Chia thought about Mary Alice and Eddie. Zona Rosa took a knife from her jacket pocket and squatted on a shelf of pinkish rock. Golden dragons swirled in the shallow depths of the knife's pink plastic handle. She thumbed a button of plated tin, and the dragon-etched blade snapped out, its spine sawtoothed and merciless.
She has no balls, your Kelsey.
She's not my Kelsey, Zona.
Zona picked up a length of green-barked branch and began to shave thin curls from it with the edge of the switchblade.
She would not last an hour in my world.
On a previous visit, she told Kelsey stories of the war with the rats, pitched battles fought through the garbage-strewn playgrounds and collapsing parking garages of vast housing projects. How had that war begun? Over what? Zona never said.
Neither would I.
So who is looking for you?
My mother would be if she knew I was here.
That was not your mother. The one who put the fear into Kelsey?
If someone knew my seat number on the flight over, they could get a ticket number and trace it back, right?
If they had certain resources, yes. It would be illegal.
From there, they could go to Kelsey.
From there, they are in the frequent flyer miles of Air Magellan, which implies very serious resources.
There was a woman on the plane. She had the seat beside me. Then I had to carry her suitcase, and she and her boyfriend gave me a ride into Tokyo.
You carried her suitcase?
Yes.
Tell me this story, all of it. When did you first see this woman?
In the airport, SeaTac. They were doing non-invasive DNA samples, and I saw her do this weird thing.
Chia began the story of Mary Alice and the rest of it, while Zona Rosa sat and peeled and sharpened her stick, frowning.
Fuck your mother,
Zona Rosa said, when Chia had finished her story. The translation rendered her tone as either amazement or disgust. Chia couldn't tell.
What?
Chia's confusion was absolute. Zona looked at her along the length of the peeled stick.
An idiom. Idioma. Very rich and complicated. It has nothing to do with your mother.
She lowered the stick and did something to her knife, folding the blade away with a triple click. The lizard she'd adjusted earlier came scurrying low across a narrow ledge of rock, clinging so close as to appear two-dimensional. Zona picked it up and stroked it into yet another color configuration.
What are you doing?
Harder encryption,
Zona said, and put the lizard on the lapel of her jacket where it clung like a brooch, its eyes tiny spheres of onyx.
Someone is looking for you. Probably they've already found you. We must try to ensure that our conversation is secure.
Can you do that with him?
The lizard's head moved.
Maybe. He's new.
But those are better.
She pointed up with the stick. Chia squinted into the evening sky. Dark cloud, tinted with streaks of sunset pink. She thought she saw a sweep of wings, so high. Two things flying.
Big.
Not planes. But then they were gone.
Illegal in your country. Colombian. From the data havens.
Zona put the pointed end of her stick on the ground and began to twirl it one way, then the other between her palms. Chia had seen a rabbit make fire that way once in an ancient cartoon.
You are an idiot.
Why?
You carried a bag through customs? A stranger's bag?
Yes.
Idiot! I am not. She is a smuggler. You are hopelessly naive.
But you went along with sending me here, Chia thought, and suddenly felt like crying.
But why are they looking for me?
Zona shrugged.
In the district, a cautious smuggler would not let a mule go free.
Something silvery and cold executed a tight little flip somewhere behind and below Chia's navel. And with it came the unwelcome recollection of the washroom at Whiskey Clone and the corner of something she hadn't recognized. In her bag, stuffed down between her t-shirts. When she'd used one to dry her hands.
What's wrong? I better go. Mitsuko went to make tea.
Talking too quickly, biting off the words.
Go? Are you insane? We must... Sorry. Bye.
Pulling off the goggles and scrabbling at the wrist fasteners. Her bag there, where she'd left it. The Walls of Fame.
We had no time to do this right, the woman said, handing Lainey the iPhones. He was sitting on a child-sized pink plastic bench that matched the table. If there is a way to do it right...
There are areas we could not arrange access to, said the Japanese-American with the ponytail.
Blackwell said you've had experience with celebrities,
actors, Lainey said, musicians, politicians.
You'll probably find this different, bigger, by a couple of degrees of magnitude.
What can't you access? Lainey asked, settling the phones over his eyes.
We don't know, he heard the woman say. You'll get a sense of the scale of things going in. The blanks might be accountancy, tax law stuff, contracts. We're just tech support. He has other people. Someone pays to make sure parts of it stay as private as possible.
Then why not bring them in? Lainey asked. He felt Blackwell's hand come down on his shoulder like a bag of sand.
I'll discuss that with you later. Now get in there and have a look. What we pay you for, isn't it?
In the week following Allison Shire's death, Lainey had used out-of-control's Datamerica account to re-access the site of her personal data. The nodal point was gone, and a certain subtle reduction had taken place. Not a shrinkage, so much as a tidying, a folding in. But the biggest difference was simply that she was no longer generating data. There was no credit activity. Even her Upful Groupvine account had been canceled. As her estate was executed and various business affairs terminated, her data began to take on a neat rectilinearity. Lainey thought of the dead bundled squarely in their grave clothes, of coffins and cairns, of the long straight avenues of cemeteries in the days when the dead had been afforded their own real estate. The nodal point had formed where she had lived. While she had lived in the messy, constantly proliferating interface with the ordinary, yet endlessly multiplex world. Now there was no longer an interface. He'd looked, but only briefly and very cautiously, to see whether her actor might be undertaking tidying activities of his own. Nothing obvious there, but he imagined Out of Control would have set a more careful watch on that. Her data was very still. Only a faint, methodical movement at its core. Something to do with the ongoing legal mechanism of the execution of her estate. A catalog of each piece of furniture in the bedroom of a guest house in Ireland. A subcatalog of the products provided in the 17th century walnut commode at bedside there. Toothbrush, toothpaste, analgesic tablets, tampons, razor, shaving gel. Someone would check these periodically, restock to the inventory. The last guest had taken the gel, but not the razor. In the first catalog, there was a powerful pair of Austrian binoculars, tripod-mounted, which also functioned as a digital camera. Lainey accessed its memory, discovering that the recording function had been used exactly once on the day the manufacturer's warranty had been activated. The warranty was now 2 months void. The single recorded image, a view from a white-curtained balcony, looking toward what Lainey took to be the Irish Sea. There was an unlikely palm tree, a length of chain-link fence, a rail bed with a twin, dull gleam of track, a deep expanse of grayish-brown beach, and then the gray and silver sea. Closer to the sea, partially cut off by the image's border, there appeared to be a low, broad fort of stone, like a truncated tower. Its stones were the color of the beach. Lainey tried to quit the bedroom, the guest house, and found himself surrounded by archaeologically precise records of the restoration of 5 vast ceramic stoves in an apartment in Stockholm.
These were like giant chess pieces, towers of brick faced with elaborately glazed, lavishly molded ceramic. They rose to the 14-foot ceiling, and several people could easily have stood upright in one. There was a record of the numbering, disassembly, cleaning, restoration, and reassembly of each brick and each stove. There was no way to access the rest of the apartment, but the proportions of the stoves led Laney to assume that it was very large. He clicked to the end of the stove record and noted the final price of the work. At current rates, it was more than several times his former annual salary at Slitscan. He clicked back through points of recession, trying for a wider view, a sense of form, but there were only walls, bulking masses of meticulously arranged information. And he remembered Allison Shires and his apprehension of her data death. "The lights are on," Laney said, removing the iPhones. "But there's nobody home." He checked the computer's clock. He'd spent a little over 20 minutes in there. Blackwell regarded him dourly. Settled on an injection-molded crate like a black-draped Buddha, the scars in his eyebrows knitted into new configurations of concern. The three technicians looked carefully blank, hands in the pockets of their matching jackets. "How's that, then?" Blackwell asked. "I'm not sure," Laney said. "He doesn't seem to do anything."
"He doesn't bloody do anything but do things," Blackwell declared. "As you'd know if you were orchestrating his bloody security."
"Okay," Laney said. "Then where do you have breakfast?" Blackwell looked uncomfortable.
"In his suite."
"His suite where?"
"Imperial Hotel."
Blackwell glared at the technician. "Which empire, exactly?"
"Here, bloody Tokyo."
"Here? He's in Tokyo?"
"You lot," Blackwell said, "outside."
The brown-haired woman shrugged inside her nylon jacket and went kicking through the styrofoam head down, the other two following in her wake. When the top dropped behind them, Blackwell rose from his crate.
"Don't think you can try me on for size."
"I'm telling you that I don't think this is going to work. Your man isn't in there."
"That's his bloody life."
"How did he pay for his breakfast?"
"Signed to the suite."
"Is the suite in his name?"
"Of course not."
"Say he needs to buy something during the course of the day."
"Someone buys it for him, don't they?"
"And pays with?"
"A card."
"But not in his name."
"Right.
So if anyone were looking at the transaction data, there'd be no way to connect it directly to him, would there?" "No, because you're doing your job, right?"
"Yes."
"Then he's invisible." "To me." "I can't see him. He isn't there. I can't do what you want to pay me to do. It's impossible."
"But what about all the rest of it?"
Laney put the iPhones down on the keyboard.
"That isn't a person. That's a corporation." "But you've got it all. His bloody houses, his flats. Where the gardeners put the bloody flowers in the rock wall. All of it."
"But I don't know who he is. I can't make him out against the rest of it. He's not leaving the traces that make the patterns I need." Blackwell sucked in his upper lip and kept it there. Laney heard the dislodged prosthesis click against his teeth. "I have to get some idea of who he really is," Laney said. The lip reemerged, damp and gleaming.
"Christ," Blackwell said. "That's a poser."
"I have to meet him." Blackwell wiped his mouth with the back of his hand.
"His music, then?"
He raised his eyebrows, hopefully.
"Oh, there's video."
"I've got video, thanks. It really might help if I could meet him." Blackwell touched his ear stump.
"You meet him. You think you'll be able to get his do that thing Yammer's on about?"
"I don't know," Laney said. "I can try."
"Bloody hell," Blackwell said.
He plowed through the styrofoam, swept the tarp aside with his arm, barked for the waiting technicians, then turned back to Laney.
"Sometimes I'd soon be back with my mates in Jika Jika. Get things sorted in there. They bloody stay that way."
The woman with the brown bangs thrust her head in past the edge of the tarp.
"Collect his business in the van," Blackwell told her. "Have it ready to use when we need it."
"We don't have a van, Keithy," the woman said.
"Buy one,"
Blackwell said. 18. The Otaku. Something rectangular, yielding to the first touch, but hard inside as she tugged it free. Wrapped in a blue and yellow plastic bag from the SeaTac duty-free, crookedly sealed with wrinkled lengths of slick brown tape. Heavy. Compact. Hello. Chia very nearly falling backward, where she crouched above her open bag at the voice and the sight of this boy, who in that first instant she takes to be an older girl, side-parted hair falling past her shoulders. I am Masahiko. No translator. He wore a dark oversized tunic, vaguely military, buttoned to its high banded collar, loose around his neck. Old gray sweatpants bagging at the knees. Grubby-looking white paper slippers. Mitsuko made tea, indicating the tray, the stoneware pot, two cups. But you were ported. Is she here? Chia pushed the thing back down into her bag. She went out. Masahiko said. May I look at your computer? Computer? Chia stood, confused. It is Sandbenders, yes? She poured some of the tea, which was still steaming.
Sure. You want tea?
No, Masahiko said. I drink coffee only. He squatted on the tatami beside the low table and ran an admiring fingertip along the edge of the sandbender's cast aluminum. Beautiful. I have seen a small disc player by the same maker. It is a cult, yes?
A commune. Tribal people in Oregon.
The boy's black hair was long and glossy and smoothly brushed, but Chia saw there was a bit of noodle caught in it, the thin kinky kind that came in instant ramen bowls.
I'm sorry I was ported when Mitsuko came back. She'll think I was rude.
You are from Seattle. Not a question.
You're her brother?
Yes. Why are you here? His eyes large and dark, his face long and pale.
Your sister and I are both into low res.
You have come because he wants to marry Raithaway? Hot tea dribbled down Chia's chin.
She told you that?
Yes, Masahiko said. In Walled City, some people worked on her design. He was lost in his study of her sandbender, turning it over in his hand. His fingers were long and pale, the nails badly chewed.
Where's that?
Net side, he said, flipping the weight of his hair back over one shoulder.
What did they say about it?
Original concept. Almost radical. He stroked the keys. This is very beautiful.
You learned English here?
In Walled City. Chia tried another sip of tea, then put the cup down.
You have any coffee?
In my room, he said. Masahiko's room at the bottom of a short flight of concrete stairs to the rear of the restaurant's kitchen had probably been a storage closet. It was a boy nightmare, the sort of environment Chia knew from the brothers of friends. Its floor and ledge-like bed long vanished beneath unwashed clothes, ramen wrappers, Japanese magazines with wrinkled cover. A tower of empty foam ramen bowls in one corner, their hologram labels winking from beyond a single cone of halogen. A desk or table forming a second higher ledge cut from some recycled material that looked as though it had been laminated from shredded juice cartons. His computer there, a featureless black cube. A shallower shelf of the juice carton board supported a pale blue microwave, unopened ramen bowls, and half a dozen tiny steel cans of coffee. One of these, freshly microwaved, was hot in Chia's hand. The coffee was strong, sugary, thickly creamed. She sat beside him on the lumpy bed ledge, a padded jacket wadded up behind her for a cushion. It smelled faintly of boy, of ramen, and of coffee. Though he seemed very clean, now that she was this close, and she had a vague idea that Japanese people generally were. Didn't they love to bathe? The thought made her want a shower. I like this very much. Reaching to touch the sandbenders again, which he'd brought from upstairs and placed on the work surface in front of his black cube, sweeping aside a litter of plastic spoons, pens, nameless bits of metal and plastic.
How do you see to work yours?
Gesturing toward his computer with a miniature can of coffee. He said something in Japanese. Worms and dots of pastel neon lit the faces of the cube, crawling and pulsing, then died. The walls from floor to ceiling were thickly covered with successive layers of posters, handbills, graphics files. The wall directly in front of her, above and behind the black computer, was hung with a large scarf, a square of some silky material screened with a map or diagram in red and black and yellow. Hundreds of irregular blocks or rooms, units of some kind, pressing in around a central vacancy. An uneven vertical rectangle, black.
Walled city, he said, following her eye.
He leaned forward, fingertip finding a particular spot.
This is mine, 8th level.
She pointed to the center of the diagram.
What's this?
Black hole. In the original, something like an air shaft. He looked at her.
Tokyo has a black hole, too. You have seen this?
No, she said.
The palace.
No light.
From a tall building at night, the Imperial Palace is a black hole.
Watching once, I saw a torch flare.
What happened to it in the earthquake?
He raised his eyebrows.
This, of course, would not be shown.
All now is as before.
We are assured of this.
He smiled, but only with the corners of his mouth.
Where did Mitsuko go?
He shrugged.
Did she say when she'd be back?
No. She had thought of Hiromi Ogawa, and then of someone phoning for Kelsey's father.
Hiromi?
But then there was whatever it was, upstairs in her bag in Mitsuko's room. She remembered Mary Alice yelling from behind the door to Eddie's office.
Zona had to be right.
You know a club called Whiskey Clone?
No. He stroked the buffed aluminum edges of her sand fenders.
How about monkey boxing?
He looked at her, shook his head.
You probably don't get out much, do you?
He held her gaze. In Walled City.
I want to go to this club, monkey boxing. Except maybe it isn't called that anymore. It's in a place called Shinjuku. I was in the station there before.
Clubs are not open now.
That's okay. I just want you to show me where it is. Then I'll be able to find my own way back.
No. I must return to Walled City. I have responsibilities. Find the address of this place, and I will explain to your computer where to go. The sandbenders could find its own way there. But Chia had decided she didn't want to go alone. Better to go with a boy than Mitsuko. And Mitsuko's allegiance to her chapter could be a problem anyway. Mainly, though, she just wanted to get out of here. Zona's news had spooked her. Somebody knew she was here. And what to do about the thing in her bag?
You like this, right?
Pointing at her sandbenders.
Yes,
he said.
The software's even better.
I've got an emulator in there that'll install a virtual sandbenders in your computer. Take me to monkey boxing, and it's yours.
Have you always lived here?
She asked as they walked to the station.
In this neighborhood, I mean?
Masahiko shrugged. Chia thought the street made him uncomfortable. Maybe just being outside. He'd traded his gray sweats for equally baggy black cotton pants, cinched at the ankle with elastic-sided black nylon gaiters above black leather work shoes. He still wore his black tunic, but with the addition of a short-billed black leather cap that she thought might have once been part of a school uniform. If the tunic was too big for him, the cap was too small. He wore it perched forward at an angle, the bill riding low.
I live in Walled City, he said.
Mitsuko told me. That's like a multi-user domain.
Walled City is unlike anything.
Give me the address when I give you the emulator. I'll check it out.
The sidewalk arched over a concrete channel running with grayish water.